A few weekends ago, a downtown Fresno nonprofit called Common Space teamed up with local health organizations to run a mobile health clinic specifically for the LGBTQ plus community, and they brought doctors in training to teach them cultural sensitivity. As for how providers could learn to better serve the LGBTQ plus community, I spoke with two of the doctors who ran the program, starting with Kenny Bond, an emergency room physician at UCSF Fresno and Community Regional Medical Center.
I am not an expert in transgender care or LGBTQ+. I have my own training, but as an emergency physician, I try to be culturally competent, but I'm doing general medical care. So when Dr. Nicole, who actually does this, comes in and has a specific patient population coming in here, I'm learning as much from them of not just how to address them, but what kind of special needs they have and kind of what are the barriers to care for them. I'll learn that there are some patients that are transgender, get hormone injections, but they're scared to inject themselves. So they're fearful of doing their self-injections. So we're working on seeing if we can get an injection clinic specifically so that patients that once we establish them and give them their meds, but they're scared of needles and sticking themselves, that we can actually help them through that process. So that's something I didn't know before I started the first clinic, but these are things you learn as you go.
Right, like it's not enough to just hand them a bag with the proper, you know, medication, the syringes. It's, you know, you need to break down more barriers than that.
Absolutely. I think the general public, I think most physicians know that almost the least important part of medical care is writing that prescription. But many people think of physicians as that's their job. But it seems like that is the end point of many things, but that's only if you're not addressing all the barriers to care, if you're not going into why they need it, if you're not integrating in and figuring out about them, then you can't come to the diagnosis and get the resources that you need in order to affect care. Your total health, probably 20% is actually physician care, right? If you don't have access to safe spaces, clean drinking water, clean air, if you're worried about your next meal, if you're worried about being assaulted or drug exposure at your house, those are hard to think about controlling your diabetes and eating a healthy diet. There's things that we have to really realize as physicians, which we are learning and training, but we're hopefully also teaching the next generation down here, that we have to really be aware if we want to impact change.
Yeah, tell me about, I mean, what's different about a clinic like this, you know, coming here to serve the LGBTQ plus community versus something you'd bring to maybe a homeless or a transitional care sort of area? Like, what are the differences in needs?
What people don't realize is they think about these big things, these complex problems, but honestly, most of these patients are just actually looking for physicians that are culturally competent and sensitive to their needs. And it's basically understanding that human beings are human beings. However you're born, whatever race, whatever ethnicity, whatever gender assignment you're at or you believe you're at, it's not about that. It's about treating people like humans. And I think in certain communities, like in this community, they sometimes have not felt that with the medical community. So I say that half of our job is taking care of them, but the other half is really just endearing trust in the community to know that there are people that care about you and you should be treated like a human being.
Yeah, talk more about that cultural competency, because I know, I imagine at least for, you know, the listeners or people who will see the story who are perhaps cis, heterosexual, you know, they'll say, oh, well, you know, physicians are physicians. I mean, what is there that isn't right? You know, what are some of the gaps that you've seen in some medical care, and then how do you aim to sort of combat those?
Well, there's a couple things you look at. If you look at the LGBT community in general, certain things spike in their population. We talked about HIV, but you talk about like some mental health diseases, drug abuse, domestic violence. These are much higher rates, so we have to be very sensitive to this patient population. The second part is because they have not always had medical care that's culturally competent, they often don't seek care. So the classic thing is that they have a lot of medical problems that are basically unaddressed, and they hide from them, and they wait for things to culminate and be, you know, like very end stage and very expensive to fix instead of doing preventative care. So we're trying to make sure that we're reaching out to initiate preventative care for these patients. So it's not always about this, like, oh, we say something that is special or using gender appropriate terms. Of course we're going to do that, but I think the most important thing is basically being open and basically understanding you can't pass judgments on people without walking in their shoes and understanding where they're coming from. I think it changes a lot of how you view. I'm a heterosexual male with a family, married with kids. It doesn't mean that I don't care for people who are not just like me. That's silly. As a physician, we should care for people as a whole.
So this is the second time that this clinic has come to Common Space. Have there been other instances of this LGBTQ plus preventive care elsewhere in the community here before, or is it just these two times so far?
This is only the second time for medical aspects. So what has happened is Common Space is a nonprofit that tries to group other LGBT-friendly services together, and they do everything from cultural to art to social, you know, as support groups. So what we're trying to do is trying to use already gathering centers and bringing the medical aspect to it. So yes, as my understanding, this is the second time pretty much it's ever happened in Fresno. UCSF Fresno used to have a transgender LGBT clinic down in Selma many years ago, but we lost the physician that was running it. So many years ago, we were the only LGBTQ plus specific transgender clinic in the Valley. Dr. Nicole actually is one of two providers that actually does a transgender clinic in the Valley. But the one catch, and she's volunteering her time with us here, is that she only sees insured patients at her own practice. And so she's using this avenue in order to see the percentage that are uninsured or need to get enrolled, and we can kind of take care of them regardless of what their insurance background is.
Bond mentioned another physician at the clinic, Dr. Nicole. That's Julie Nicole, a private practice OBGYN who specializes in transgender patients. She's one of the few providers to offer gender reassignment surgery in the San Joaquin Valley.
I think that as physicians, we like things that are uncomplicated. So if we take annual exams, for example, we would rather deal with patients that we know very well, that, you know, we have almost a family relationship with, that we can talk and catch up with the year. And we don't like to, we're comfortable in things that we know. And I think with transgender patients, it's yet another thing that we need to learn. I draw a parallel with Zika virus. When Zika virus arrived and we had to take care of pregnant women and being careful with the Zika, we felt like, oh my God, it's another thing we have to learn. And I feel a lot of providers are kind of overwhelmed by, oh, this is another thing we have to learn, where in fact it is really, really, really simple to provide good care to the trans population. So, and how I became interested in that field, I mean, there's the how I became interested in that field and why am I interested in that field. And the how is because as a first year medical student, I saw a documentary called Transgeneration. And it was following the life of four college students going through transition. And in that documentary, there was a young woman who went for her surgery in Trinidad, Colorado. Surgery was done by an OBGYN. I contacted that OBGYN, and I did a rotation as a med student, a rotation as a resident. And after residency, I joined her practice for about 14 months. So that was all before my move to Fresno. I left her practice to move to Fresno. And the why is that, you know, I was kind of a non-traditional student. I was a single mom in medical school, kind of an underdog. And I feel that this is a patient, you know, they are underdogs. They are neglected. They don't have a lot of support. They are very misunderstood, but it's such a rewarding field.
Yeah, tell me more. Rewarding how? You know, how do you feel, you know, as someone who serves this population and right. when you come out of a procedure or just even right. a regular appointment, you know, how do you feel that?
Well, you know, you take somebody who had been, you know, not misunderstood, but, you know, when they arrive to come and see me for, let's say, hormone replacement therapy, it's a big step for them. And you literally have them cross this bridge, you know. You're changing their software, you know, the hormone software from male to female. And it is such a relief. Like 99% of the time, my patients feel tons better after, you know, a few months after treatment. And they're like, oh, my voice drop or my breasts are growing. And it's such a huge weight lifted off their shoulder. And you see that every day. Yeah, like you get people well.
And so in order to administer hormones properly and do these gender reassignment surgeries, I mean, does that require extra training? And are there like specific concentrations or fellowships where you can get that? Or do you have to do what you did and specifically seek out providers right. who are already doing it?
Well, I think right now it's getting easier. There is now fellowships for surgeries that are being made available for individual or graduating from gynecology, urology, plastic surgery. So there's a few fellowship. There's also fellowship in mental health for psychiatrists. And this is pretty new in the past 5 years or so. The WPATH, which is the World Professional Association for Transgender Health, makes available, they have programs for surgeon mental health professionals. So the education is much present than when I started to do this over 10 years ago. I was lucky because I had, in my residency program, I had great support from the reproductive, endocrine, and infertility department. And they were very supportive and we kind of got trained together.
And of course, you're talking about, relatively specialized care, hormone, surgeries, or, talking kind of the trans population. But of course, there's, another goal here is to provide kind of more general preventive care.
Right.
What do you see as the gaps or the barriers in terms of, the medical community providing preventive care to the LGBTQ community?
Well, I think, we tend to be very heteronormative. When we arrive at an OBGYN, like how many times people are asked, hey, do you need birth control? But it's not every woman, depending on their relationship status. So I tend to ask, like, are you in a situation where you need birth control? So being conscious that it's not everybody is heterosexual. And I think that's a gap. And I found that the LGBT community in general have to educate their providers more than providers need to provide guidance and counseling to them.
And and talk about gender pronouns too. How that may seem like a very simple thing, but people make gaffes all the time. How do you approach that issue when you're meeting a new patient for the first time?
Well, I ask. If you're not sure, you ask. I wear a little button with my pronouns, so that make it easy. But it's one of the very first questions I ask my patient. What's your name? And what are your pronouns? And, recently at the Community Medical Regional, we went through this huge upgrading of our electronic medical record. And that included a module that includes better description of sexual orientation and gender identity. So not only we have people with the right pronouns in the system, but we have what organs they have and what are their plans for transition.
That was emergency medicine physician Kenny Bond and OBGYN Julie Nicole.